to celebrate Yom HaTzma'ut than by beginning Sefer Yehoshua, the book of Joshua, which is, of course, the book that deals with the original conquest of the land of Israel, as well as the distribution of the land of Israel to the respective tribes. Suffice it to say that not everything goes according to plan, and it ends up being a very fascinating and intricate story of how the Jewish people were able to achieve, and this will sound very familiar to those who have an eye on the contemporary scene, great success, but in the end, a kind of a partial success. There are still enemies left at the end of Sefer Yehoshua. There are unsolved problems and unresolved issues. But that being said, the argument has been made, and I will try to make it throughout our study of this remarkable work, that Joshua is perhaps the most successful Jewish leader we have in all of Tanakh, in terms of what he set out to achieve. You always have to measure somebody by what their goals were, what they set out to achieve, and did they or did they not achieve those goals. If you don't know what you're out to achieve, it doesn't matter what you do, probably not going to be successful. Yehoshua had a very clear agenda. And that agenda is really what the first chapter is all about, and that's what we're going to look at today. But he also had an extremely daunting task, because not only was he going to be the one to lead the Jewish people into the land of Israel, which is, of course, challenging enough in its own right, but perhaps even more significant to the beginning of Joshua's career is the fact that he is filling literally the biggest shoes imaginable. And the specter of Moses, of Moshe Rabbeinu, which really hangs over not only Joshua personally, but the entire Jewish people, is something which has to be dealt with throughout the work, but especially in the opening sections when Joshua is just trying to get his feet under him. So I wanted to begin, and again, you can follow inside if you're familiar. I'm going to largely be summarizing these texts with a passage from the Talmud. The Gemara in Maseches Nedarim 22b makes a remarkable statement. The Gemara says the truth of the matter is that we have 24 canonical works in the Bible. We, of course, have the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, the five works of the Torah. We have eight works of the prophets, and then we have 11 works of Ksuvim, of the writings. And the truth is that we wouldn't have needed any of the Nevi'im or Ksuvim, the Gemara says. We wouldn't have needed any of the prophetic traditions or the writings, Nevi'im or Ksuvim, if it wasn't for the fact that the Jewish people had sinned. The only reason we have, let's say, it's a remarkable statement, the only reason that we have the book of Isaiah, Sefer Yeshayahu, according to this Gemara, is the Jewish people were involved in all kinds of sins, and God had to send this prophet to rail against them. The first 40 chapters, 39 chapters of Yeshayahu are filled with invective against the Jewish people. They're sinning in all kinds of ways. And God directs Yeshayahu to rebuke the Jewish people, perhaps it will make a difference. But there's one exception to this rule. There's one work, the Gemara says, that was absolutely indispensable, and that is the work of Yehoshua. So it's a remarkable thing. And the Gemara says, well, why is that the case? Mipnei she'erka shel eretz Yisrael hi, because it has to do with the value of the land of Israel. Now, it's true that there are those amongst the Rishonim, the primary commentaries, who assume that that's kind of a technical matter, that is to say, we have to know where each tribe's borders are, but one could interpret this Gemara in a much more fundamental way, that is to say, that anything that has to do with the land of Israel is in fact of the greatest degree of importance. What has to be clear to us and what has to be clear to the entire world is that we have legitimate title to the land of Israel, and that's precisely why the Gemara says that Sefer Yehoshua, unlike any other work in Nevi'im or Ksuvim, in the prophetic writings or in the holy writings of Ksuvim, that only Sefer Yehoshua is essential. It's actually reminiscent of the opening Rashi on the Torah, where Rashi poses the question, why is it that the Torah didn't begin with the 12th chapter of the work of Shmos, of the book of Exodus? After all, that's really when the Jewish people begin to receive commandments. There are only three commandments in the 50 chapters of Sefer Bereishis. There are there are no commandments in the first two parshios of Sefer Shmos, in the first two sections of Sefer Shmos. So why not begin with the 12th chapter, where the Jewish people begin to receive mitzvos? And Rashi quotes the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. The answer that the only reason that we have Sefer Bereishis is Koach Ma'asav Higila Amo La'Seis Lam Nachal Asgayim, which basically means that God wanted it to be clear to the Jewish people and through the Jewish people to the entire world that God has given the land of Israel to the Jewish people. He could give. He created the whole world. He can divide it up as he sees fit. He's the owner of the entire world. And he gave the land of Israel to the Jewish people. So again, that dovetails precisely with this Gemara in Masachas Nedarim, which says that Sefer Yehoshua stands apart, stands alone from all the other works of the Nevi'im Uksuvim, in the sense that it's indispensable. The second Gemara that I brought here, and you can take a look at it, really speaks to the idea that Yehoshua and his leadership and the beginning of his, we'll see, a majestic reign. Yehoshua really does have the status of a king, as I'll try to explain today, was haunted by the absence of Moshe. Yehoshua's personal devotion to Moshe is something that the Torah itself attests to in a number of locations. And the Gemara here in Masachas Temura says that in the wake of Moshe's passing, there was a kind of a national trauma that befell the Jewish people. 3,000 halachos were lost to the Jewish people as they were mourning for Moshe during that 30-day period of mourning. The idea was that, you know, the Jewish people were in a state of shock and confusion. They simply didn't have the wherewithal to imagine life without Moshe. Moshe, of course, who not only brought them out of Egypt, but ascended Sinai and brought them to the very edge of the land of Israel. This was something that they couldn't imagine. So they said to Yehoshua, the Gemara says, you need to go and, you know, figure out what these 3,000 lost halachos are. And Yehoshua's response is a very fascinating one. He says, Lo bashamayim hi, that the Torah is not in heaven anymore. It's our responsibility. Either we're going to know it or we're going to forget it. But ultimately, the responsibility is ours. If we forgot, that's on us. We can't ask God to solve our problems for us.
That's in Devarim also.
This is a pasuk in Devarim, which the Gemara is sort of homiletically saying that Yehoshua said to the Jewish people, but Lo bashamayim, exactly right. It's from the end of Sefer Devarim, from Parshas Nitzavim. So in any event, the Gemara goes on to say that it wasn't just this kind of a national trauma, but that Yehoshua himself personally forgot 300 halachos. There were 3,000 halachos that were forgotten nationally, but that Yehoshua, who at one level was absolutely sure that he had learned everything humanly possible from Moshe, Yehoshua actually forgot 300 halachos, 300 important principles of Torah, as soon as Moshe died. And I think that the point that the Gemara is trying to make is that even though in Moshe's lifetime, Yehoshua would have said, yeah, I know everything that this man has to teach. I've been by his side now for 40 years uninterrupted. As soon as he's gone, you realize that there is more that perhaps you didn't know, and that absence actually triggers a kind of a sense of anxiety. And it's important to begin Sefer Yehoshua precisely with that perspective in mind, that Yehoshua is obviously profoundly anxious about how exactly he's going to achieve this momentous task of bringing the Jewish people into the land of Israel. But at the same time, even if he was only trying to keep the Jewish people in the desert, how is he going to be able to fill the shoes of Moshe Rabbeinu? And that's really the point that I'm driving at, as you have these two very, very large and daunting tasks that are coming together at the same time. It would have been challenging under any circumstances to get the Jewish people across the River Jordan. Under any circumstances, that would have been a difficult task, and to conquer the land of Israel and to divide it, number one. And number two, under any circumstances, it would have been very difficult to replace Moshe. And Yehoshua's got to do both at the same time. These are not exactly the ideal or optimal conditions under which to assume this incredible position of leadership. So let's now begin with the verses. The opening chapter is some 18 verses, but there's so much to say about them. The first...
Can I, just before you start?
Sure.
Or not? Why was he chosen and not Caleb?
Okay, so that's a question that we're going to deal with over time. We're not going to deal with it right now, but that's an important question. Let's say Caleb, Juliet is alluding to the fact, is the other person who survived from that particular generation. There's a lot to be said for it, but it's really a shear in its own right. So it's something that hopefully we will have a chance to relate to as we see evidence of it throughout Sefer Yehoshua. So the first nine verses or so of Sefer Yehoshua are a conversation between Hashem and Yehoshua. And there's a lot of very important points to draw out here. So let's begin. This is the third source. I'll read it first in the Hebrew, then I'll translate, and then we'll have an opportunity to discuss. Vahi acharei mos Moshe eved Hashem. It was immediately following the death of Moshe, the loyal servant of God, the idea of Moshe Eved Hashem, is one of the major themes of the chapter that we have in front of us. Vayomer Hashem el Yoshua ben Nun Mishares Moshe Lemor. So God says to Yoshua ben Nun, Mishares Moshe, the loyal servant of Moshe, the assistant to Moshe. So what we already have is that Yoshua is introduced in this text through his title Mishares Moshe. And that was the way that Yoshua was also described in the Chumash itself. Yoshua ben Nun is described as the prototypical, the Misharis par excellence. Umisharisso Yoshua ben Nun na'ar lo yamish mitocha oel, that Yoshua was always there next to Moshe. So this is a partial answer already to Juliet's question, is that the reason that he's chosen for leadership is that he is the most direct successor to Moshe. However, despite the fact that Yoshua is indeed deeply connected to Moshe, and that might be a critical, perhaps the critical element of his leadership, the first three words that God says to him are of great significance. Moshe avdi meis. Moshe, my servant, is dead. And these are the three words, more than any other words, that Yoshua absolutely needs to hear. And as long as Yoshua is operating with the assumption that he's still Mishares Moshe, he can still be the loyal lieutenant to Moshe, he's not going to be able to get anything done. And so God doesn't mince any words. It's not soft peddling Yoshua into the role. God says, Moshe avdi meis. Moshe is dead, and you're going to have to take responsibility from this point going forward.
Is that news, or is it...
No, he's trying to make emphasize. No, of course not. Yoshua knows more than anybody else. Of course, Moshe is dead.
Okay.
He's making a point, a pedagogical point, that you cannot psychologically relate to yourself anymore as the Mishares Moshe. You have to relate to yourself as a leader of the Jewish people. Moshe avdi meis... V'ata kum avoras hayarden hazeh ata v'chol am hazeh l'aretz asher anochi nosein lahem livnei Yisrael. Now cross the river Jordan, you and the entire Jewish people, to the land that I'm giving over to them. Kol makom asher tidroch kaf raglechem bo lachem nisativ. Any place where the soles of your feet touch, it will be yours. Kasher dibarti al Moshe. Just as I promised Moshe, I will make good in your days, in your generation. This theme of where the soles of your feet touch will become very important over the next few chapters. That phrase is going to be a recurring phrase. Me'amidbar ve'alabanon, from the desert into the Lebanon, hazaver anahar gadol nahar pras, until the river Euphrates, kol eretz hachitim, all the lands of the Hittites, ve'ad hayam hagadol mevo hashamesh, the Mediterranean Sea, yegvulchem. Lo yisasev ish lefanecha kol yimei chayecha. Nobody will stand in your path all the days of your life. Kasher hayisi Moshe yayimach. Just as I was with Moshe, I will be with you. Lo arpecha, I will not let you loose. Velo ezveka, I will not abandon you. Now here comes the triple formulation that perhaps is most famous from this chapter. Chazak ve'ematz. Chazak means be strong in the physical sense of the term. Amitzut is not physical strength. It's courage. It's inner resolve and resilience. Chazak v'matz, number one, ki ata tanchil as'am azel as'aretz asher nishbat lavosam la'seslem. Because you, Yoshua, have a historic role. You will, after all of these generations, the land that I first promised to Abraham in ancient times, and of course to Yitzchak and to Yaakov as well, then the period of hundreds of years of slavery in Egypt, and I didn't make good in Moshe's own generation, you have the historic role of distributing this land to the Jewish people, the land that it promised to their ancestors. Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and resilient in that task, number one. Number two, rak chazak ve'ematz me'od, be extremely resilient, even more than just chazak ve'ematz, lishmor la'asot kechol ha'torah asher tzivcha Moshe avdi, al tasur mimenu yamin u'smol, leman taskil bechol asher teleich. It will be very difficult. There are going to be many external influences, but you have to keep the Jewish people loyal to the vision that I gave Moshe at Sinai, not to deviate to the right or to the left. We'll see the significance of that particular expression. Al tasur mimenu yaminu smol, do not stray to the right or to the left. Stay on the straight path. Leman taskil v'chol asher teleich, so that you will be successful in all of your ways. And if you turn the page, the eighth verse, lo yamush sefer ha-Torah azem ipicha, you should always have the Torah, the words of the Torah, in your mouth. Ve'agisa bo yomam v'layla, and you should contemplate it by day and by night. Leman tishmor la'asos kechol ha'kasuv bo, ki az tatsliach es darchecha ve'az taskil. Only through this kind of immersive engagement with Torah and loyalty and fidelity to the vision of Torah will you be successful. Halot tzivisicha, I'm commanding you for the third time, chazak ve'ematz, al tarot ve'al techas, fear not, tremble not, kimcha Hashem Elokecha, b'chol asher telech. Three times God says to Yeshua, chazak ve'ematz. One of those times he even says, chazak ve'ematz ma'od. Clearly, Yehoshua needs strengthening. Clearly, Yehoshua needs somebody to buck his spirits, to give him what we would say, chizuk, to give him the sense that he is indeed capable of this. Now, I mentioned before that Yehoshua has the status of a king. I was not the first one to that idea. Maimonides beat me to it by a mere 800 years or so, 750 years or so. But the Rambam points out in Hilchos Malachim, towards the very beginning, underneath in the footnotes section, you have it in the second source. And I just want to try to develop the Rambam's idea that Yehoshua really did have the status of a king through some parallels in the psukim themselves between the way that the king is presented in Parshat Shoftim in Sefer Dvarim and the way that we just read about Yehoshua himself. So, for example, if we just take a quick look at the second source in the footnotes, the Rambam says, "Ein ma'midin melech b'tchila al pi bezdin shel shivim zakenim v'al pi navi." The king can only be appointed, this is sort of the constitution, as it were, for appointing a monarch. You need the full Sanhedrin, the high court of 70, and you need a prophet as well, Ki Yehoshua, just as Joshua, Sheminehu Moshe Rabbeinu Beisina, who was appointed by Moshe, and of course Moses' court of 70. So the implication of the Rambam is quite clear that Yehoshua was indeed a melech. That's a very important principle. So why does the Rambam feel that Yehoshua was a melech? So I think that the answer is really, at least to a great degree, in the psukim themselves. What was Yehoshua told? That he has to be involved with the Torah at all times, and that he should not stray left or right. Lo yamush sefer haTorah zami picha v'agisa bo yomam v'layla. We had the language of lo sasur yaminu smol. Well, that exactly is the directive which is given to the king in Parshat Shoftim. We're told that the king has an additional mitzvah. Every Jewish person has a commandment to write a Sefer Torah, or to have a Sefer Torah written. Most of us are not sofrim, are not scribes of the Torah. Every Jewish person has a mitzvah to either participate in the writing of a Sefer Torah, to write a complete Sefer Torah, to have a Sefer Torah written. Over and above that general obligation, it's a specific obligation that the king has to have a second Sefer Torah written, or to write it himself. And here the obligation differs. Whereas the average Jew, the commoner, only has an obligation to have the Sefer Torah written, that second Sefer Torah that the king has is supposed to be with him at all times. A Jew doesn't have an obligation to keep the Torah with him at all times. He can put it in the Aron. But here the Torah says, if you take a look at the footnote, this is the 19th verse of the 17th chapter in Dvarim, the underlined section, V'haysa imo v'karavol kol yimei chayav, that he should read it all the days of his life. It's basically this idea, V'hagisa bo yoma v'alayla, by day and by night, the Sefer Torah should be by the side of Joshua as the first Jewish king. The V'ilti rum levavo me'achav, the next verse, so that he should not grow haughty, ul'vilti, and so that he does not sur min ha-mitzvah yaminu smol, that he does not deviate to the left or to the right. Exactly the commandment that Yehoshua was given, lo sasur yaminu smol. So apparently what the first nine verses of Sefer Yehoshua really determine are three important factors. Number one, Moshe Avdi Meis. Psychologically, you have to take responsibility. Number two, Chazak Ve'ematz three times over. You have to be very strong. You cannot be weak. You have to be resilient. You're going to face very significant challenges, spiritual challenges. Chazak ve'matz ma'od, l'shmoras kol divrei ha'Torah zos. Chazak ve'matz ki ata tanchil, es ha'am hazeh, es ha'aretz. You have to be very strong in your political role. Chazak ve'matz al tarotz ve'al techas. You have to be very strong in the military sense of the term. And then third, what we have established between the lines is the fact that Yehoshua really is going to be the first Jewish king. Now, with all this talk of responsibility and leadership, there's a very important Gemara in Menachos 99b that's worth mentioning here concerning the verse, V'hagisa bo yomam v'layla, that Yehoshua should meditate upon the Torah by day and by night. It's obviously a very strange thing. If you think about one person who probably does not have the headspace, it might not even be responsible for him at times to be thinking about the Torah. It'd be a king who's about to lead a conquest of an ancient land, the 31 city-states in that land, who has a responsibility for distributing that land to the Jewish people. What exactly is it supposed to mean, V'agisa bo yomam v'alayla, that Yehoshua is going to contemplate the words of the Torah by day and by night. It seems like a very strange thing indeed. So the Gemara was also very taken by this, and the Gemara notes that Yehoshua, in terms of his background, and this is, again, explicit in the Torah itself. We mentioned the verse before. U'misharso Yehoshua ben Na'ar lo yamish mitocha oel. Yehoshua literally stayed by Moshe's side at all times in the Oel Moed. As Moshe was teaching the Jewish people, Yehoshua was absorbing everything. This is the time of year where we learn Pirkei Avos, the very first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Moshe kibel Torah misinai u'misara li Yehoshua. We studied this a number of weeks ago, those who were at the Pirkei Avos here in chapter 1. What does it mean, umisara li Yehoshua? It doesn't say vilimda li Yehoshua. Moshe taught, pedagogically speaking, the Torah to the entire Jewish people. Misara li Yehoshua means that he made Yehoshua responsible for the transmission of Torah to his generation. And Rashi notes that term, misara, it means that he put Yehoshua in charge of the Torah, gave him responsibility for the safe and unadulterated transmission of the Torah that Moshe had received and passing it on to the next generation, as Yehoshua does. Yehoshua is Zakenim, Zakenim Nevi'im, Nevi'im La'anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And Rashi asks, well, why Yehoshua? Why was he chosen to be the guarantor of Torah in his generation? And there are really two factors, and Juliet, this relates to your question before. Number one, Yehoshua worked harder than anybody else. Mishar so Yehoshua ben Na'ar lo yamish mitocha oel. He put in more effort to understanding the Torah that Moshe had received at Sinai. Number two, kana shem tov ba'olam, as Rashi notes, that Yehoshua was beloved. People liked him. He's described in the Torah as isha sharuach bo. Rashi comments, what does it mean that he is a person of his spirit about him? Yachol alachas keneged rucho shel kolachas v'achas. He had the capacity to relate to any kind of person, irrespective of background, a level of observance, wherever their demographic was, etc. So it was the combination of those two things that made Yehoshua really the right person for the job. So if that's Yehoshua's, just one second, if that's Yehoshua's background, so something very important emerges. Is Yehoshua really going to be up for this particular task? I mean, if Yehoshua's true love is to be able to involve himself and immerse himself in the study of Torah, so then how is he going to take to now the responsibility of being the military commander of the Jewish people, of being responsible for the conquest and distribution of the land? So the Gemara Menachos says that this verse, Lo yamush sefer haTorah zemipicha v'agisa bo yomam v'alayla, is not so much a command as it is a havtacha, a promise, that Yehoshua was being given a promise by God that he would be able somehow to synthesize his first love, which was to study the Torah, with his newfound national responsibilities. It's a remarkable thing. Normally we think about this verse, V'agisa bo yomam v'alayla, as the classical verse mandating Torah study by day and by night. And indeed, that is the prevailing view, and that is the view that is cited in this Gemara. But there's another view that's important to be aware of, which assumes that this is a havtacha. It's a promise to Yehoshua that he will succeed in being able to synthesize his commitment to study of Torah, his immersive commitment to Torah, with his newfound national responsibility. So that's the first section of the parak. Now, the 10th and 11th verses represent a kind of a subsection, and then we'll move on to the conclusion of the chapter. So this is the 10th verse. Vayitzav Yehoshua es shotrei ha'am lemor. Yehoshua gives a command to the shotrim, to the officers of the Jewish people. And he says, Ivru b'kerav ha'machaneh, go back and forth through the camp, vitzavu es ha'am lemor, and give the command saying, Hachinu lachem tzeda, prepare provisions, ki ba'od shloshes yamim, because in 3 days, 72 hours, atem ovrim es ha'yarden hazeh, you will cross this river Jordan, lavo l'areshes es ha'arat asher Hashem elokeichem nosein lachem l'rishta, that God is giving you as an inheritance. In other words, Yehoshua tells the shotrim. Shotrim always appear in the Torah in the context of war. For example, in Parshas Shoftim, we're told that the shotrim, the law enforcement officers amongst the Jewish people, will accompany them out to battle. So this is the emergence of the shotrim. It's the first we're seeing of them, but it certainly will not be the last that we're seeing of them. Now, the conclusion of the first chapter takes us back to a remarkable element at the very end of Sefer Bamidbar. There's this, it's almost hard to believe, even if you know the story well. The Jewish people conquer the Trans-Jordan, the eastern bank of the River Jordan, from these two Amori kings, the Amorite kings, Sichon and Og. And it's this massive tract of land. And Moshe is approached by tribal leaders from Reuven and Gad that they do not want to go across the River Jordan to the land of Israel. They say, Ki va'a nachalasenu elenu me'ever hayarden mizracha, because we recognize this as the appropriate portion for us. We do not want to cross the River Jordan. Now you can imagine Moshe goes ballistic. After 40 years, you know, and he's already dealt with the sin of the spies. And now the Jewish people are telling him again, yeah, we're going to stay here if that's okay. And Moshe says, no, that's not okay. That's not okay at all. And he says two things. He says, number one, do you have no shame? Hachichem yavo la milchama ve'atem teishvu po. See this after Yom HaZikaron. Your brothers are going to go to war and you're going to sit here. So forget about whatever spiritual, high-minded, idealistic values the land of Israel. But do you have no sense of loyalty to your brothers? Do you only care about yourselves? That you say, well, this land is good for us because we've got a lot of cattle and whatever, and grazing land. Mikne Rav. Hachichem yavo l'milchama v'atem teishu po. Have you no sense of shame? And number two, v'lama t'niyun et lev b'nei Yisrael, you're going to discourage the Jewish people from crossing over into the land of Israel. They're going to say to themselves, well, wait a minute, this doesn't make so much sense. There are all these scary Canaanite tribes there, Canaanite nations. Do I really want to go to war? Maybe we can all squeeze in here. It's not so bad. We already got this territory. And he says, you're no better than the spies. V'hine kamtem tachas avoseichem tarbus anashim chataim. You have followed in the footsteps of your parents, a culture of sinful people. Moshe is apoplectic about this request. And then a deal is struck. And the basic way that the deal works is as follows. Reuven and Gad tell Moshe, no. We have great loyalty to the Jewish people. Anachnu navor chalutzim. We are going to navor chushim. We are going to be the pioneers. We're going to be the first ones into battle in front of the rest of the Jewish people. That's number one. So we're not going to return to our land until the Jewish people as a whole and we at the front conquer the entire land of Israel. And in that way, we're not going to be discouraging anybody from recognizing that the land of Israel is, of course, west of the Jordan River, but we're going to be a kind of an annex. Now, despite the fact that a deal is reached and Moshe says, okay, well, if you're going to really do this and you're going to make sure that the land of Israel is properly conquered and settled before you return home, then I guess there's something there's something of a deal that can be made here. Nonetheless, Chazal deal very harshly with Reuven and Gad. There's a famous statement of Chazal that they were the first ones exiled, because if you think about it, the exile of the northern tribes came from the northeast, from Assyria, Sennacherib, Melchashar. So the first ones that he got to were Reuven and Gad. They were the first ones to go into exile. In other words, that it didn't serve them well in the end. But be that as it may. A deal was struck. So now Yehoshua, this is not an easy conversation to have. The first chapter of Sefer Yehoshua concludes with precisely this point. Yehoshua goes to Reuven and Gad and says, "Are you ready to honor your commitment? You made a commitment to Moshe. You took an oath in front of the entire Jewish people. I was there. Elazar HaKohen was there. Aharon had passed away. His son Elazar was his successor. You took an oath in front of the entire Jewish people that you were indeed ready to fight and to fight in the very front lines on behalf of your brethren for the sake of the conquest of the land of Israel." So now Yehoshua turns to them and says, it's time to walk the walk. You've talked the talk, but it's time to walk the walk. So you have it here, the 12th through 18 verses. V'la ruveni v'la gadiva chatsi shevet hamnashe amar Yehoshua leimor. It's an interesting story how Menashe gets involved. Basically, the short version of the story is what happens is that this is massive tract of land, and Reuven and Gad simply aren't populous enough to make sure that it stays within Jewish hands. So part of the tribe of Menashe, Moshe kind of recruits them, and they go and conquer the northernmost portion, what we call Golan Babashan. So the way that it is running from north to south is Menashe, Gad, and then Reuven in the area opposite the Judean mountains. Okay. I never like to say half of Menashe. It's really just a part of Menashe because it's not actually half. It's just the number of families. Amar Yehoshua lemor, Zachor et hadavar asher tivatchem Moshe Eved Hashem. Remember very well what Moshe, again, Eved Hashem, commanded you. Hashem Elokeichem iniach lachem v'natan lachem et ha'aretz hazot. God has given you this land where we are right now in the Transjordan, the eastern bank of the Jordan River. Nisheichem, your wives, tapchem, your children, miknechem, and your cattle, yeshvu ba'aretz asher natan lachem Moshe be'ever yordain, ve'atem tavru chamushim lifnei acheichem kol giborei hachayil v'azartem otam. You must go in front of the Jewish people, and you must aid them. Remember, Yeshua here is echoing that first thing that Moshe said. The first thing that Moshe said is, Hachichem yavo l'melchama v'atem teishvu po. Are you not going to fight on behalf of your brothers? Are you going to run away from the fight? So the first thing that Yeshua mentions is v'azartem otam. You have to help your brothers. Ad asher yaniach Hashem l'achichem kachem. Until that time when God will make sure that the land is conquered and all of the rest of the Jewish people will come to Menucha, will come to their Nachala, their portion. V'yarshu gam hema et ha'aretz asher Hashem Elokeichem noten lahem, v'shavtem la'aretz yirushatchem, v'rishtem otah asher natan lachem Moshe v'Hashem be'ever yarden mizrach ha'shamesh. So the deal is, only after the Jewish people have inherited their land will you be able to return to this Transjordan, where Moshe, again, Eved Hashem, this is the third time he's referred to as Moshe Eved Hashem, the loyal servant of God, has given you this section of land. Now, this is the test. Are Reuven and God going to honor, you know, what do they think of Yoshua? Are they going to say, yeah, well, of course we said that to Moshe, because, you know, he was Moshe, and, you know, when dealing with Moshe, you had to toe the line. But, you know, with you, we'll see who's really Chazak Ve'amatz. But this is a remarkable thing.
Can I ask? First of all, is that the first time Chazak Ve'amatz is used in?
No, Chazak Ve'amatz is used repeatedly in the context of Yoshua in the beginning of Parashat Vayelech.
But before Yoshua, no?
No.
Okay.
Yoshua is, it's Chazak Ve'amatz is always in the context of Yoshua.
Okay. And second of all, were the tribes like existing separately when, you know, at this point, or were they sort of confused and all of a sudden they claimed identities based on territory?
No, the tribes go all the way back to the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. Remember, the way that they camp around the Mishkan is by tribe, so the tribes are distinct.
Okay,
so Vayanu et Yoshua lemor, kol asher tzivitanu na'aseh. This is a great line. Everything you command us, we will do. Ve'el kol asher tishlachenu nelech. Wherever you send us, we will go. Kechol asher shamanu al Moshe ken nishma ilecha. Just as we were loyal to Moshe, we will be loyal and listen to you. Rak yashem okecha imach. The important thing is that God should be with you as God is with Moshe. You imagine Moshe and, you know, in the grave saying, I'd like to have heard this in my lifetime. This would have been a welcome piece of news in his lifetime. You never get in your lifetime. But all of a sudden Moshe is gone. They gave Moshe a hard time when he was alive too. Kol ish, this is the important part. Kol ish asher yamret picha. Anybody who will dare to violate your will. V'lo yishmat varecha, will not heed what you say. L'chol asher tetzavenu, everything that you command him, yumat, he will be put to death. Rak chazak ve'amatz. The only thing we ask of you as our leader is strong leadership. That's the only thing we ask for, is that you be strong and you be courageous. Now this whole idea of kol ish asher yamret picha, anybody who will violate what it is that you say. Again, this harkens back to the theme I was developing before, the idea that anybody who will not listen to Yeshua is effectively rebelling against the king, Moreid B'malchus. And the punishment for somebody who's a Moreid B'malchus is indeed capital punishment. So again, you see here that Reuven and Gad and Menashe have a sense that Yeshua is the Melech. And Kol Ish Asher Yamres Picha, anybody who will dare to defy the word of Yeshua, they're going to make sure that that person is put to death. Nobody will challenge your leadership. Rak chazak ve'ematz. So, again, you have three basic sections to the first chapter. The first is God telling Yoshua that he has to take responsibility. There's no such thing as leading from behind, if you'll permit me the expression. Moshe avdi meis. And you have to be prepared to assume the awesome responsibility of filling Moshe's shoes. Now, again, Yoshua was deeply vexed by Moshe's death. His loyalty His personal loyalty to Moshe was beyond question. Remember, we read that Gemara together, where the Gemara says that Moshe was in a Yoshua was in a state of shock when Moshe passed away. He started forgetting things that were once obvious to him, even as there was a state of confusion and panic amidst the entire Jewish people. How are we going to proceed without Moshe? Yoshua was the same one. I could have mentioned this before. There's this remarkable scene in the 11th chapter of Sefer Bamidbar, where these two individuals, very cryptic individuals named Eldad and Medad, have become prophets, and they're prophesying in the camp. And when Yoshua hears about this, he thinks that they're threatening the role of Moshe, and he says, Adoni Moshe, my master Moshe, kila'im, put them in jail, stop them. He sees them as a threat, and Moshe says, why do you think that I'm so jealous? I'm so threatened. Would that it were that all the Jewish people were prophets. I don't feel threatened at all by this. But Yoshua's loyalty to Moshe is unquestioned. Well, that loyalty may be the most important factor in terms of Yoshua being able to continue Moshe's work. But at the same time, it can be a real barrier, an obstacle, in terms of his capacity to serve as the leader of the Jewish people. After all, if he's going to have to take responsibility, he can't be asking himself every second, well, I don't know, I'm not sure, I'm up to this, I don't know. If Moshe were here, Moshe Avdi Meis, Moshe is dead. And you, Chazak V'Ematz, Chazak V'Ematz Meod. We had four times in the chapter, three times from God, once from Reuven and God. The idea is you have to be strong in a position of leadership. You cannot be waffling, you cannot be indecisive. Number one. Number two is that Yoshua is going to be a melech. And that malchus is expressed by this idea of lo yamush sefer haTorah zemi picha v'agisa bo yomam v'layla. That king has an additional responsibility to create a second sefer Torah. But sigi, not for putting in the yarrow, not for putting anywhere else. That second sefer Torah is v'haysayimo v'karavo kol yamei chayav. That it has to be his guiding light, it has to be his lodestar in terms of his charting the course of the Jewish people and his personal course. And that indeed is what Yehoshua is given. And third and finally, we spoke about Yehoshua's background, where Yehoshua had demonstrated this true love for Torah. So, you know, this position would come at a certain cost to that. It would obviously constrain him and force a national responsibility on him. He can no longer be in the shadows of Moshe. So we spoke about the Gemara in Menachos, which says that verse, V'agisa bo yomam v'layla, that you will contemplate it by day and by night, is a promise that God is making Yehoshua, that somehow, some way, he will be able to continue to involve himself in his passion for the study of Torah, even as he takes on these enormous additional responsibilities. The second section is a very brief one, where Yehoshua tells the Shotrim, the military officers, to begin to move about the Machaneh, to get the Jewish people ready, to get them on a war footing. They have to prepare their provisions. In 3 days, they're going to cross the River Jordan. And then third and finally, Yehoshua turns to Reuven and God says, we're going. Are you going to live up to your word and come with us? And not just come with us, will you be at the front? This is the first test of Yehoshua's leadership. By the way, when we get to the very, very end of Sefer Yehoshua, around the end of the summer, we're going to see that this idea of Reuven and God possibly forming a separatist movement and breaking off from the Jewish people, which was what Moshe was so upset about, Hachichem yavola milchama v'atem teshupo, that issue is not going to be resolved. It gets started on a very strong footing here, where Reuven and God says, V'chol asher tishlachenu nelech, you want to send us to Afghanistan, we'll go there, Madagascar, we'll go there, Argentina, we'll go there, wherever you tell us to go, we're going to go. And not only that, kol isha asher yamres picha, v'lo yishmas tevarecha, you must, we're going to put to death anybody who violates your will. So it starts off sounding really good. It's going to get very, very complicated with Reuven and God by the end of the Sefer. But in any event, the first test of Yehoshua's leadership, where he has to go to 1/6 of the Jewish people, even a little bit more than that, 2.5 tribes of the Jewish people, and it says, are you going to live up to what you promised the days of Moshe? And the initial returns are very strong. And they say, the only thing that we ask for is that your leadership be strong leadership, be decisive leadership, and that you take responsibility for the Jewish people. What we're going to take a look at next week is the famous story of these two spies that Yehoshua sends into the city of Yericho, which will be the first target of the Jewish people. Yericho sogeres and misugeres. It's a closed city. It's walled in. These powerful walls that we're going to be learning about at the very beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. And it's a fascinating story because everything goes wrong that could possibly go wrong. And in the end, everything goes right. So it's an amazing story that we're going to take a look at, the story of Rachav, a prostitute who, it's hard to make these stories, are better than fiction, who hosts these two spies and everything that transpires with Rachav. And then we will continue on. So if you want to just get a little bit ahead of the game, take a look at chapters 2 and 3 in advance. Steve?
What I was going to say is, going back to the initial discussion, Juliet had commented, I too was thinking about Kalev, but it raises another interesting